Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am your host, Kate Romero, and I just want to give some gratitude over to Don Newsom at bbsradio.com and Seth, his wonderful, wonderful right arm over there. And I want to tell you that I have a real treat tonight. I have Gary Raynard, the author of The Disappearance of the Universe and Your Immortal Reality. And he's got many, many other things going on, which we will talk about in this hour. And just to give you some insight about Gary, you can pull up his website at www.garyraynard.com. That's GaryRaynard.com. And just take a look at his website as I introduce him. And The Disappearance of the Universe came into my radar about a year ago. And when I heard the name, actually Barbara Rose, who's a wonderful author, told me personally, she called me on the phone and she said, you have to read this book. And I said, okay, I'll read this book. So I went out and got the book, and I went out and got the audio book also. And I was like, this is a very unusual book. So what it actually says on the website right here is, what would you do if you were sitting quietly in your living room when a mysterious couple appeared from out of nowhere and then told you that they were ascended masters who had come to reveal some shocking secrets of existence and teach you the miraculous powers of forgiveness? Would you call the cops, call a psychiatrist, call out for pizza? When two such teachers appeared before Gary Raynard in 1992, he chose to listen to them and to ask a lot of impertinent questions. The result is this startling book, an extraordinary record of 17 mind-bending conversations that took place over nearly a decade, reorienting the author's life and giving the world an uncompromising perspective on A Course in Miracles, a spiritual teaching destined to change human history. And I'll just read a review written by Dr. Wayne Dyer, who's one of my favorite people also. It says, a book that is destined to be one of the most significant contributions to spiritual literature in this century. The messages in Gary Raynard's The Disappearance of the Universe are of great importance to the healing of ourselves and our planet. So without further ado, I think I'd like to bring on Mr. Gary Raynard at this time. Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm good, Kate. How are you?
Great. So thanks for making time. I know you're over in Hawaii right now doing some seminars. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing a couple of workshops, but it's always a good excuse to come to Hawaii.
Of course. So, what island are you on over there?
I'm on Oahu, where I did a workshop on Saturday, but I'm going to head for the Big Island on Thursday, and I'm going to do a workshop there this Saturday.
Oh, wonderful. And when are you coming back?
Oh, I imagine in about a week and a half.
Oh, in a week and a half. And you just recently moved from Maine to Southern California, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's about as far as you can move and still be in the continental United States.
Yeah, it's pretty far. So are you going through culture shock, or was it an easy move for you?
Well, I feel kind of like at home in California, so it wasn't too much of a culture shock. I actually grew up in the Boston area, which is pretty crowded.
Yes.
And it's only the last few years when I lived in Maine that I had all the peace and quiet. And that was, looking back on it, the perfect place for me to be at the time, because it was a quiet and peaceful place for Arnold Persia to come and give me these teachings, and then I was able to slowly but surely integrate them into my life as time went on.
Right. So there's something about a sofa that they would come and sit on in your house?
That's right. I was meditating in my living room in Poland Spring, Maine.
Uh-huh.
And I came out of my meditation, and there were two people sitting there on my living room couch. It was like this beautiful, wonderful, amazing, incredible-looking, drop-dead, gorgeous woman was sitting there, and some guy. I didn't care too much about him.
And some guy who you didn't really pay much attention to.
He was this good-looking, Greek-kind-of-looking kind of guy. I hate him.
You hate him, yes. Well, being that life is an illusion anyway, you might as well make it the way you want it.
That's true. And the woman eventually called herself Persa, but said that 2,000 years ago, in a previous incarnation, she was St. Thomas.
She would
and,
say what? St. Thomas?
She said that she was St. Thomas
right.
2,000 years ago. And the guy said that he was St. Thaddeus.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they weren't saints at the time, but the church eventually called them that. And, you know, they felt uniquely qualified to kind of like give me a different take on this Jesus guy than I had been told growing up. It actually turned out that Jesus and Buddha were very much alike.
Yes, I think so too.
Very much teaching the same things.
So they
kind of like gave me an entirely different perspective. For one thing, they spoke to me from a Jewish perspective, and I'm not Jewish, so I don't really know anything about it. And it was very educational for me, and they just taught me so much about spirituality, but it was all part of a consistent thought system that you can learn and apply to your everyday life. And looking back on it, Kate, I think that the reason that they appeared to me as bodies was because they wanted the conversations we would have to be human. Most of the spiritual teachings we get, as you know, they're channeled, even the Bible, and there's nothing wrong with that, but sometimes these teachings can seem a little bit removed from our everyday experience, where I noticed that Art and Persa, they were just so clear and so blunt that I couldn't get away from their message. I couldn't get away from what they were saying.
Right.
And, they taught me what were some pretty advanced spiritual principles, but they did it in such a way that was very clear. And after a while, I knew that I was onto something because a lot of what they teach in my books is A Course in Miracles.
Right.
And when I first picked up the course, I mean, it might as well have been written in a foreign language. You know, it's like not easy to understand.
Right.
It can be very difficult for people. Some people, end up putting it on their bookshelf for 20 years.
Yeah, I put mine on my bookshelf for 15 years.
And what the Disappearance of the Universe did for me, I noticed after a few visits that I could go back and read A Course in Miracles, and it made perfect sense to me.
Interesting.
And I'm very clear that I could not have done that. I did not study the course until after the second visit by Art and Persa. The way that they taught it to me, I just found that I could read it, I could pick it up, I could understand any part of it. It was clear. It was like somebody turned the light on. And I'm very clear that I could not have done that. I could not have written The Disappearance of the Universe on my own. True, it does contain my story because I have my narration and I have my notes, and people can see how I'm trying to apply these lessons of forgiveness, you know, to my everyday life as I go along. And so for that reason, it is my story, and it's very much about my life. However, the teachings themselves were not mine and were, given by Jesus in A Course in Miracles. And I know some people don't even like to use that word, but I think that Art and Persa were just so matter-of-fact about him. And
they call him Jay, don't they?
Yeah, that they could kind of like give me a lot of information. Even though The Disappearance of the Universe is a fairly long book, it doesn't read like a long book. I think it's entertaining enough and certainly funny enough. You know, there's a lot of humor in the books. And once again, I think that was just part of the way that they appeared to me, because they knew the only way that I would have the kinds of discussions with them that I did would be if they were people. And I think that that's why they appeared that way. And, of course, what's really important is the quality of the teachings, and that's what determines the efficacy of a message, I believe, the quality of the teachings themselves, which you certainly see in A Course in Miracles. It's perhaps one of the most advanced spiritual teachings ever given, and yet at the same time, it's relatively simple in the sense that it's asking us to choose between one of two things, and only one of those things is real. For example, it says right in the introduction, it says, nothing real can be threatened. Well, what that is spirit, but it's not spirit the way that the world traditionally thinks of it. The world is based on separation.
Right.
And that's because we mistakenly believe that we've separated ourselves from our source. That's what you could call the idea of ego, the idea that we've separated ourselves from our source. And when the Course uses the word spirit, it's not talking about a separation idea. Most of the terms in the Course are not meant the way that the words are traditionally used in Western culture. For example, this kind of spirit would be something that would be no less than God. It would be perfect oneness with God. In fact, the Course defines heaven as the awareness of perfect oneness. And the idea there is nothing else. You know, nothing else outside this oneness, nothing else within. And so this kind of spirit would be no less than God. It would be perfectly flawless. It would not be changing or shifting, because if something is changing or shifting, then it's evolving. And if something is evolving, then it's not perfect.
Right.
But according to A Course in Miracles, God really is perfect love, even though other people have said that. they don't usually give us a God who's perfect love.
Mm-hmm.
But A Course in Miracles really does give us a God that's perfect love. And it's saying that we are no different than him, that we are exactly the same as our source, still one with our source. And then, as the Course would put it, he would say, you are at home in God, dreaming of exile, but perfectly capable of awakening to reality. And that awakening is enlightenment. It's what Buddha meant when he said, I am awake. He realized that the world was something that was not being done to him. And of course, this is also true with Jesus. They realized that the world was not being done to them. It was being done by them.
Yes.
It's actually a projection that is coming, you know, from their own unconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the difference between cause and effect. You know, if the world is being done to you, then forgiveness is not justified.
Mm-hmm.
But if the world is being done by you, then forgiveness is totally justified. And as A Course in Miracles would say, anger is never justified.
Mm.
It doesn't say that you'll never get angry.
Right.
But it does say that it's never justified. And the reason it's never justified is because, as the Course also teaches, the secret of salvation is but this, that you are doing this to yourself. So the whole thing is actually coming from you. It's just a projection, nothing more than that. There is no universe of time and space. There's just a projection of a universe
mm-hmm.
of time and space. It's like, the Course says, you know, behold the great projection. Of course, the American Indians used to say, behold the great mystery. Well, A Course in Miracles says, behold the great projection, because that's all that it really is. And it's just being done by you, and it has nothing to do with reality.
Yes.
Of course, you know, the Hindus and the Buddhists have always, you know, taught that this world is an illusion. But I think the Course further refines that idea into it being this dream that we will awaken from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you start to see parallels between certain teachings. Although A Course in Miracles is also original, because there are parts that are original to it that do not exist in other teachings. But
right.
Certainly, the kind of Jesus character that Art and Persa was describing to me was a Jewish mystic. For those people who don't know, Jesus was not a Christian. And he was also a very Eastern thinker, which is why he was a lot more like Buddha than people think. You know, Jesus was from the Middle East. You know, not Mississippi. I mean, he had a very, you know, Eastern way of thinking about things, which you see in the Gospel of Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who don't know, the Gospel of Thomas was the first gospel that was ever written.
Mm.
It was destroyed by the church. It was a sayings gospel, which means that it simply had a listing of things that Jesus said. The first gospels had no stories. Those stories came later and kept being kind of like refined over the centuries by the church
mm-hmm.
until after, you know, another 300 years, you had the Bible. But, you know, it took hundreds of years
mm-hmm.
for that religion to be formulated. And it really didn't have very much of anything to do with what Jesus was all about, because he was completely uncompromising in his love and his forgiveness. And there are important reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, people would understand that Jesus knew the kinds of things that people are learning today, like in the Kabbalah. And a basic idea in Jewish mysticism is the idea that heaven is closeness to God, and hell would be distance from God.
Yes.
But Jesus, being very uncompromising kind of a person, didn't stop there. He didn't compromise on ideas. He went all the way with them. So for Jesus, you know, heaven wouldn't just be closeness to God. It would be oneness with God.
Mm.
In fact, it would be perfect oneness with God. And hell wouldn't just be distance from God. It would be anything that is separate from God.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it narrows it down to a choice between one of two things that we can't get away from. Only one of them is real, and that, of course, is God or spirit, which, you know, the term in A Course in Miracles is synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this, God that is perfect, and the way to achieve that is by understanding a couple of things. The first thing we would have to understand would be that our unconscious mind knows everything.
Right.
You know, there's nothing in the universe of time and space that your unconscious mind is not aware of. It has access to every piece of information that there is. And one of the things that your unconscious mind knows would be a Buddhist principle that was even more, you know, widely used 2,000 years ago, because Buddhism used to be even more mindful than it is today. Mm-hmm. What people do is they tend to take things and put them out there in the world and make it about the effect instead of the cause. You know, so now religion becomes about behavior, it becomes about what you do, when A Course in Miracles is saying, no, this is a course in cause and not effect, which is why it's always done at the level of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the Course says, seek not to change the world. It says, seek rather to change your mind about the world.
Yeah.
So the focus of A Course in Miracles is always on the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always done at the level of the mind. And one of the things that the unconscious mind knows is a Buddhist principle that there is just one ego appearing as many.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that, yeah, we look out, we may see billions and billions of people, but, you know, there's really just one of us. No matter how many times you divide and subdivide the mind, and no matter how many times the mind shows up in a container, so to speak, because it's based on the thought of separation, no matter how many times you divide and subdivide it, there's still really just one of us. And our
mm-hmm.
unconscious mind knows that. Our unconscious mind knows that there's really just one of us, and you're it. You know, it's not somebody else.
Right.
And if Jesus, you know, being a pretty smart guy, you know, put all that stuff together, then he would say, well, wait a minute here. If there's really just one of us appearing as many, and if my unconscious mind knows that, then what am I doing if I go through life judging and condemning other people? All that I'm really doing is judging and condemning myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't look that way because we've been tricked by this thing called the ego, which is appearing as many, or as the Hindus would call it, you know, the world of multiplicity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we're seeing is not true. Our unconscious mind knows that there's nobody out there. And if we go through life judging and condemning other people, the only one that is going to is us. It's going
mm-hmm.
directly into our own unconscious mind as a message, like, you know, to translate it to my life. You know, let's say that I'm driving down the highway and somebody cuts me off in traffic and I go, oh, that son of a bitch. And I,
right.
Well, I just called myself a son of a bitch.
Right.
Because there isn't really anybody out there for it to go to. And not only that, but it actually determines how you feel about yourself.
Yes.
The way that you look at other people and the way that you think about other people, it doesn't have to be articulated.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that you're thinking it about another person is really just going to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you understand that, I would think you'd want to get pretty damn careful about the way you think about other people. You know, because all you're really doing is you're setting yourself up. It's going to determine not only how you feel about yourself. I mean, you know, people wonder why there's so much depression out there. Just look at the garbage, you know, that people have been thinking their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a good mind training system, like A Course in Miracles or Buddhism, the Course doesn't claim to be, you know, the only way to go home. You know, it just says that it's one form of the individual curriculum. It's not a religion. It's a self-study course that's done between you and Jesus or you and the Holy Spirit or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to join anything. And what it does is it kind of like not only gives you a theory, but actually trains the mind to think along a certain line. And that's very important because it's something that Jesus says right in the introduction to the workbook. He says, an untrained mind can accomplish nothing. You know, and that's a pretty provocative statement because he's saying that, you know, like 99.999% of all the people in the world are accomplishing basically nothing with their spirituality because the mind needs to be trained and to have a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do that, you know, for example, the workbook of A Course in Miracles, which is a year-long study program, but it usually takes people a little bit more than a year to do it. It took me about a year and 4.5 months. But it actually retrains your mind, gives it a discipline so that you know how to look at things. You know what everything is for. And most of the time, you know, if something happens that used to irritate you, then you know what to do with it. You know how to forgive it. But you're not forgiving it now because it's really there. You're forgiving
mm-hmm.
it now because it's really not there. You know, just like Course in Miracles says, forgiveness, and of course when the Course talks about forgiveness, it's talking about true forgiveness as opposed to, you know, the backward kind of forgiveness that some people in the world practice, because most people are forgiving people even if they're doing that, and most people don't even do that, but if they do, then they're forgiving people because they think they've really done something.
Mm-hmm.
But A Course in Miracles says, forgiveness does not pardon sins and make them real. It sees there was no sin. and in that view are all your sins forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
I might add that only in that view are all your sins forgiven, because of a very important law of the mind that A Course in Miracles contains. Jesus says, as you see him, you will see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, never forget this. You know, it's like whatever you're putting out there, that's going to determine not only your experience of life, but ultimately by overlooking the body and seeing people as what they really are, which is the spirit, which is no less than God, but perfect oneness with God. As you see them that way, you come to experience yourself as being that.
Yes. Can I interject something here, Gary? I'm having a thought about something that might, other people might be wondering this as well. What I'm hearing as I'm listening to you is being that we project our own feelings about ourselves onto other people, basically, because we are all one. And when we're saying, you know, you SOB for cutting me off, we're actually calling ourselves that.
That's right.
Because there's no one out there but us, and we're calling ourselves that as we project that out there. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would behoove us to focus our loving attention on a being like Jesus, who is pure goodness and pure love and pure light and pure spirit. So as we do that, at least we're channeling those thoughts about Jesus into ourselves.
That's
so
right.
We're getting this goodness from somewhere by focusing at least on one mystic, one person of light, one being called Jesus or God. And when we have these thoughts of reverence towards God or Jesus, we are actually having them towards ourselves. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the more you do that, the more it will actually start to shift your experience from the experience of being a body, which is separate from the rest of the universe,
yes,
to being one with all of it.
So now I'm understanding why it is important to have something greater than yourself to focus on, a spirituality, and I'm getting a clearer picture as to why we need to do that, because that is basically the only respite we get from all the negative thoughts we're having about ourselves.
That's right, Kate. And I think it's important to point out a couple of distinctions, because, you know, a lot of people, when they first get into this kind of work, they'll learn that the universe is an illusion, and it'll kind of bum them out at first. You know,
right.
They think, it doesn't matter. It's just an
empty
illusion.
Empty and meaningless.
And you have to remember that that's not true. It does matter what you think.
Yes.
You know, there's no such thing as an idle thought. Every thought is important. And if you're going through life seeing the universe as just an illusion that's empty and meaningless, then eventually you're going to think of yourself as an illusion that is empty and meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
And that's depression.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go a couple of steps further, like Jesus did, for example, one step along the way is certainly the idea that we call namaste in this country.
Yes.
You know, the divinity in me bows down to the divinity in you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a step in the right direction, but it's still too limited, you know, because you're still confining that person in your mind to that, you know, tiny little speck of time and space.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so important to remember that the Course goes all the way with this, that it sees people as being no different than God.
Yes.
You know, no less divine than God, perfectly one with all of it. So it's not that you're not going to see bodies or look at bodies or have normal relationships with bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about giving up the world. Remember, we already quoted the Course as saying, seek not to change the world, seek rather to change your mind about the world. So
right.
It's like we don't have to give up anything. You know, we can have normal lives, we can have normal relationships with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you meet somebody, you fall in love, you want to get married, you know, get married, be normal. You know, live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, you're just looking at it differently. You know, you're just kind of like converting over this way of kind of like overlooking the body, even though you still see them, and even though you still have normal relationships with them. Now in your mind, you're kind of like thinking of them as not being that. You're thinking of them as being what they really are, which is the spirit that's immortal and invulnerable and perfectly one with God. And as you see them that way, eventually, that's how you have to think of yourself in your unconscious mind, because your unconscious mind is translating everything that you think as a message about you. And if you think of everybody that way, then eventually you're going to think of yourself that way. And that's why Jesus completely forgave the world. You know, and if we, you know, partially forgive the world, we will be partially forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this unconscious guilt that's in the mind that runs the world that people don't even know about. You know, but it's responsible for, you know, all of the madness that we see on our TV screens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all the war and for all the crime and all the personal problems and compulsions and addictions that are out there. It's all run by this unconscious guilt that's in the mind, that if it were healed, then you would be completely healed. There would be no reason to reincarnate again, because the world is really a place so that this unconscious guilt can be projected onto others. But it doesn't get rid of it, unfortunately. The ego wants you to think that by being right and by making other people wrong, that that's good judgment. But the truth is we've been tricked by
mm-hmm.
the ego. And the ego actually likes this idea of separation,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it feels special.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the ego got to be God, you know, by making this universe of time and space. And, you know, some people want to think of the universe as being a benevolent kind of thing. The truth is it's neutral, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it has both good and bad. And it's a world of duality and polarities and opposites. And there are ideas that cannot exist in perfect oneness.
Mm-hmm.
That can only exist in a world of opposites, such as scarcity. You would have both abundance and scarcity
mm-hmm.
in this world, because those are polarities, those are dualities. You
but
would have
without confinement,
life.
You can't know freedom, basically.
Right. And you can only have death in a world like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you have perfect oneness, there's no counterpart, so there's only eternal life,
mm-hmm.
which is what God is. And heaven is eternal, and it's possible to even experience that. While we appear to be here in bodies, it's possible to have the experience of what it's like to be with God and attain that perfect oneness with God.
Mm-hmm.
And usually at first it will just come in what the Course calls lovely flashes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might just last a second or two.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so amazing that the feeling of awe that you get from it could go on for hours.
Better than sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm looking at that excerpt in your book right now.
The reason it's better is because it lasts... you know, it has this underlying feeling of constancy,
mm-hmm.
and constancy does not exist in the world of time and space. You only have change, and
mm-hmm.
so the only thing that you can count on in this world is that it's going to change.
Yes.
You know, and if it's going to go good, good, but then it goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as my friend Ken Wapnick said, this is not the happy world, and nobody in their right mind would come here. You know, because it contains a world of death. You know, and there is no death where we belong. There is no death in eternal life. And that's why when Jesus' prodigal son, in his story 2,000 years ago, went home to God, God ran to him from a distance and embraced him and said, you know, this my son was dead. Now he's alive again. You know, he was lost and now he's found. You can't have death in perfect oneness, which is why Of Course in Miracles, right at the beginning of it, it says the opposite of love is fear. But what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. So it's really about returning home, just as Jesus' prodigal son did, which is a personal decision that nobody can make except for you. I mean, you know, that's the kind of decision that everybody comes to in their own time. They came to himself, like the prodigal son, and realized that there was just one problem, and that was the fact that he left home. And it's just one solution, and that's to go home.
Mm-hmm.
So the Course identifies the one problem of separation and deals with it. It actually removes the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, as the Course puts it, which is the same idea as undoing the ego, which is why Course in Miracles says salvation is undoing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you have to do is undo the false you, and then eventually the real you will be all that's left.
Right,
you know,
and there's something in your book here that I've been wanting to ask you about, which this may be a good time to do that, unless you'd like to complete what that thought you were having, and
well,
then
I
can ask.
Well, I mentioned that you don't have to struggle to be what you already are. You're already perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So all we really need to do is undo the ego.
Mm-hmm.
If you undo the ego, then eventually the real you is going to be all that's left.
Mm-hmm.
And that real you is perfect love, no different than God, which is why A Course in Miracles says, teach only love. That is what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it feeds on itself because, you know, the way that you treat other people speaks volumes about how you feel about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, it just keeps feeding on itself as it goes along. It gets stronger. The ego gets more undone. And it leads to peace. It leads to a shifting of bodily identity more to the experience of being spirit, up to and including the point where eventually you'll get to the point where it's actually impossible to feel physical pain.
Yes, and I have a question here that other people might be wondering as well, Gary. I'm hearing everything you're saying. I think it's wonderful, and it resonates, and it's great information. It's Course in Miracles, and there's a lot of stuff we don't know that we're just touching on. There's definitely a spiritual revolution and a consciousness that's happening. That it's a momentum that can't be stopped, and it's practically happening by osmosis. And I want to ask you, what would you do with all this wonderful love and seeing every person as spirit? What do you do with toxic people in your life? How do you practice that and have toxic people in your life? What do you personally do about that, or do you just stop seeing them as toxic?
I think that eventually you can only see people one of two ways, according to what the Course is teaching us. It's teaching that that person is either expressing love, which is what some people are doing,
mm-hmm.
but if there is a toxic personality in your life, then you would see that person as calling out for love.
Ah.
So now you see these people as the suffering ones.
Mm.
Now you realize that they're miserable.
Yes.
That's why they're that way.
Yes.
And not only that, but you can actually change your own experience of life simply by changing the way that you look at them. You can still see them, no matter how toxic they may appear to be. You can see them as being this perfect love that is no different than God. And when you do that, you're actually helping them at some level, because as the Course in Miracles says, minds are joined. That's because there's really only one mind. And so these minds are joined, and when you're thinking about that person, no matter what it is, you're actually sending them a message as what you said about osmosis. It's kind of like the mind is kind of like communicating at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So that message is getting to them on some level, you know, that they're innocent and that they're really the same as God.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're actually helping them, you know, when you do that. And, of course, Jesus was very good at that 2,000 years ago, and he was able to heal people by teaching them that they're not guilty and that they're innocent, which is how he healed the paralyzed man there in the book of Mark. You know, he said, rise up and walk, your sins are forgiven you.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, people freaked out because they thought only God had the power to forgive sins, and Jesus said, no. No, the Son of Man has the power to forgive sins. What he meant was that you have the power to forgive sins.
Mm-hmm.
And so by thinking about other people differently, we're helping them. We're in a better position to help the world, not that there is any world, but we're in a better position to extend love.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Course says, teach only love, for that is what you are. Well, if love is where you're coming from, then you don't have to go looking for it.
Right.
You know, you already have it, and so you just extend it to others.
And God is not coming from you. God is not coming to you. God is coming from you.
That's absolutely true, and it's possible to actually experience that.
Right. So is it okay to love people from a distance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're forgiving somebody, it doesn't mean that you have to spend the rest of your life with them.
Right.
Or something. I mean, what happens now is you practice forgiveness and you undo those blocks to the awareness of love's presence. Then you're getting more and more access to spirit in your mind. You know, in fact, as you know, the word inspired means in spirit.
In spirit, yes.
So what starts to happen is that now you start to feel more guidance mm-hmm. from the Holy Spirit. You know, you start to trust that part of you that is the real you, that's bigger than any individual. And you start to kind of like have ideas come to you that tell you what you should do or where you should go or whether or not you should quit that job, you know, or whether or not you should move from Maine to California.
Yeah, I call that your knower.
Yeah.
Your knower knows it.
It's like the more you get in touch with that, the more inspired ideas you have, and you start to actually trust the guidance that you're receiving because, well, for one thing, it works.
Right.
And the more it works, the more you're going to trust it. So all these things kind of like fit together and kind of like feed on themselves. And before you know it, you're living a life where you are not only extending love like Jesus did and forgiving everybody, but then on top of that, you're feeling inspired. You know, that's what Jesus was talking about 2,000 years ago when he talked about the gifts of your Father. He wasn't talking about physical miracles. He was talking about these inspired ideas that come into your mind that tell you how to make things work or
mm-hmm.
tell you how to have good things in your life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So was it the beginning of your spiritual awakening, let's say, when you were bringing a lawsuit against somebody and then all of a sudden you decided to drop the lawsuit because you wanted to end all the confusion in your life and the negativity, and you became better friends after that with this person that you dropped the lawsuit for? Was that
yeah.
the beginning of, I mean, had the Ascended Masters come to visit you at that time, or was that after?
I kind of like let go of that lawsuit a couple of months before Art and Persa appeared to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all of us on a spiritual path, that spiritual path will get accelerated by making a decision.
Yes.
And that's the kind of decision that you see me making at the beginning of the Disappearance of the Universe. I actually said that I want to remove conflict from my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not a little goal. That's a pretty big goal.
That's gigantic.
And if you want to remove conflict from your life and have a peaceful life, well, then I didn't know exactly how to go about it because Art and Persa hadn't appeared to me yet, but
right.
it just felt right
mm-hmm.
that if I was going to remove conflict from my life, then I couldn't be suing somebody.
Right.
You know, so I just kind of like, let that go. And then eventually we became good friends again.
Mm-hmm.
And within 6 months later, both he and I were doing the workbook of A Course in Miracles together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the kind of, little miracle that comes along when you do practice love and forgiveness.
Yes.
As A Course in Miracles says, a miracle, which is forgiveness, is never lost. It can have undreamed of effects in situations of which you were not even aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's always miraculous things going on at the level of the mind. We may not always see them, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and forgiveness is definitely it's a better quality of life.
Yes.
Also.
Yes, I totally get what you're saying. And the question about toxic people in our life, we all have them. That's how wars are started. And I know that the term spiritual warrior is an oxymoron.
Yes.
Because war is it's an atrocity. And I'm basically allergic to it myself. And, you know, I was born an indigo child to an atheist family, and that was an interesting beginning. And
wow.
I know that I chose that. And it's been a very incredible life that I've had. And I also learned early on that everything pretty much is an illusion. It is perspective. Nothing has meaning until you give it meaning, but it takes a while to learn that. And if you don't have somebody helping you learn that, you have to find out by yourself through trial and error. And as spiritual beings on a human journey, boy, can we get into some trouble. And there's something in your book here on page 8 that I want to just bring up and have you elaborate on it just a bit. It says, to correct something usually means that you fix it up and keep it. When the false universe is finished being corrected by the Holy Spirit, it will no longer appear to exist. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. Eventually, when the time comes that everybody in the world has forgiven the world, then you don't have any reason for it anymore.
Right.
For example, in the near-death experience, and this will kind of like bring that subject back in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
In the near-death experience, people report very similar experiences. You know, they'll see long-lost relatives who have gone on before them, you know, which is possible because, as we already said, minds are joined,
mm-hmm.
and that's why that kind of psychic phenomena and mediumship is all possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then they usually, they're going down a tunnel, and then they kind of like, you know, they see the light, which is obviously symbolic of God. And they want to go home to God, but then what happens is they kind of like zap back into their body again, or it appears that way. So that's mm-hmm. the near-death experience, and because of that, they report it as a very blissful kind of an experience,
mm-hmm.
you know, very ecstatic and wonderful. The only problem is they can't tell you the rest of the story. If they could tell you the rest of the story, they'd be dead, and they wouldn't be able to tell you the rest of the story.
Right, right.
So I'll tell you the rest of the story.
Too. Yeah, and I came back. It was like I got born twice. The first time was pretty harsh, and the second time was just as hard to come back into my body. It was very painful.
Yeah.
So I know what you mean.
So what happens is, in the rest of the near-death experience, people are going toward the light.
Mm-hmm.
And a funny thing happens on the way to the light. What happens is that there's this unconscious guilt that's there in the mind that can be traced all the way back to the original idea of being separate from God. You know, there's this deep, terrible ontological guilt that's in the mind that feels guilty, you know, about leaving God, just the way that the prodigal son in that story felt guilty
mm-hmm.
about leaving. And he didn't realize that God didn't share any of those ideas with him. That according to God, he was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And would always see him as being innocent because perfect love really is perfect love. And if it is, then the only thing that it would know how to do would be to love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but with this unconscious guilt in the mind, in that near-death experience, we want to get away from it. You know, we want to actually escape from it. And the way that we hide from it is just in another body. And any body will do. We're never actually in bodies. It's just an optical illusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it does feel that way. I'm not here to say that isn't our experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible to change that experience by looking at things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, when everybody gets to the point where you don't have any of that unconscious guilt in the mind, then the reason for a projection of time and space ceases to exist, and what you awaken to is perfect oneness with God. So when you lay the body aside for the final time, as the Course puts it, then what you do is you actually keep your perfect oneness with God, you keep the experience going, and it becomes your permanent reality. And that's, you know, what is facilitated by the kind of forgiveness that A Course in Miracles is teaching. It actually has the Holy Spirit, you know, undo this unconscious guilt and heal the mind, and then eventually you get to the point where you don't need a body.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a body to project that unconscious guilt onto other bodies. You don't need a universe of time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you awaken to is this perfect oneness with God that is just the most beautiful and amazing experience that you can ever have. And in that experience is constancy,
mm-hmm.
which is something that cannot be taken away from you. It goes on forever. It would contain the quality of a sexual orgasm, but at the same time, it lasts forever.
I call that a high-frequency mental orgasm.
Yes, absolutely. That's good. And, you know, it's kind of like that becomes a permanent experience, not a temporary
one. Exactly,
exactly. Which is how it starts out. The word eternal actually means without time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like in this world, there's always a next. You know, I got the job, what's next? You know, I got the girl, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got my degree, what's next? You know, there's always a next in this world. But in heaven, there is no next. You don't need a next. You know, there's just this underlying feeling of constancy that is so great that nothing else is necessary. And there's no scarcity or death or any of those ideas, which can only exist outside of perfect oneness. So it really is perfect.
I'm having a personal experience in this human physical form of living heaven on earth right now. And could it be better? Probably. Will it be better? Yes. Do I have days that are more difficult than others? Yes, I do. However, for the most part, I do feel like heaven is between my ears. And I believe that the word Satan is the acronym for seeing all things as negative. So for me personally, if I may say, I've reached a place where I know that my perception is the heaven that I want to believe in and that I do believe in and that I live in. And I can live in it now in my physical body. And having died before when I was 19 and having that experience of bliss, I chose to come back into my body. And when I did, it was very painful and my lessons continued. I could have stayed gone, but I chose to come back. So I believe that, you know, like you said before, heaven is closeness to God, and Jesus took it further and said oneness with God, and hell is distance from God, and Jesus took it further and said anything separate from God. I totally believe that. And just to digress a bit more, as an indigo child born to an atheist family, the thing that was most painful to me about that experience was being taken from God, because when I was feeling good, I felt God. And when I was feeling good, it was definitely something that was a threat to my family. So they made sure that I was no longer feeling good, which meant I was no longer feeling God. So they distanced me from God by the things they were doing and saying. And when I would go on hikes with my dogs and sit in a hollow tree, I would reconnect with God and therefore be rejoined and feel whole again. And it was when I was being taken away from that and distanced from God that I felt like that was hell on earth. So as a grown-up person, I've learned to distinguish what the differences were and to choose on purpose the things that give me closeness to God. However, you know, in as a spiritual being in a human journey, we do have toxic people that we need to learn our lessons from, about, teach and learn. We're student and teacher all at the same time. And sometimes I have questions about that, because for me to vibrate at the frequency of God is really all I want to do, and that is that permanent high-frequency mental orgasm you were speaking about. I do believe that it's possible for all of us to have that and do that and be that right here, right now, in this lifetime, and really there's nowhere to get if we just monitor what we're thinking and monitor what we're perceiving and to change the way we look at the world instead of try to change the world, as you said. So I believe that, I mean, you're in Hawaii right now. I've never been, but I'm going in a week and a half.
Good for you.
And I can only imagine that I'll get a greater glimpse of heaven on earth when I get there. So why would the Ascended Masters choose you? And I'm quoting what I heard in your audiobook today, a guy who likes to travel and commune with nature and drink beer. Why would they choose you?
Well, I guess that we're all chosen. It's just that not all of us want to listen.
Right.
Yeah, and so it's like everybody's chosen to go home to God.
Yeah.
And you notice the unique approach of Art in Persia in Disappearance. You notice that no matter what we talked about, eventually they would always bring the conversation back around to forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it for most people as facilitating the undoing of the ego and giving them the kinds of experiences that you've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's simply the approach of the Course. Now, you know, it doesn't have to be A Course in Miracles. It could be Buddhism. It could be whatever discipline you want to choose. I just
mm-hmm.
think that the feature of A Course in Miracles that Art and Persa talked about that really meant the most to me was the fact that it saves time.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the Course says, you know, that the miracle, which is forgiveness, can substitute for learning that may have taken thousands of years.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously for most of us, it's talking about saving us countless return visits, you know, to
and that
Earth,
ends reincarnation.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
That ends reincarnation, the need
that's
for
right,
it.
That's right. That's why the second book is called Your Immortal Reality. The subtitle is How to Break the Cycle of Birth and Death.
That's a great title.
Yeah, because this actually does that. It actually
right.
does break the cycle.
Right. And so I guess the ultimate thing then, Gary, would be to really authentically, genuinely forgive ourselves.
Yes, and the Course is teaching that one of the best ways to experience that is through the forgiveness of others.
Yes.
Remember, as you see him, you will see yourself. Now, there are some people out there who tend to blame themselves more
mm-hmm.
than they blame other people.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously suicide is one of the biggest problems in the world that very few people want to talk about because it's closely related to this idea of unconscious guilt
mm-hmm.
that causes people to blame themselves and in some cases take their own lives.
Right.
And that's another reason why Art in Persia gave me another forgiveness process that's in the second book for people to actually forgive themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that it's just as easy to forgive yourself as it is to forgive another body, because there isn't really any difference.
Yes,
between,
one mind.
You know, this body, when I hold my hand up in front of my face, what is that? I mean, I used to think that that was me, you know, because it looked like a very important body. I mean, after all, it was the closest one to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it turns out that our bodies are just a projection of all, no different or the same as all these other bodies.
Mm-hmm.
that are out there. So it's really no different. It just looks different. It looks closer. It feels closer in our experience. And the ego wants us to think that that's us. But A Course in Miracles would say, I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as God created me. And so it's that experience of shifting from being a body to being spirit that is part of what is facilitated, you know, by this kind of forgiveness that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wow. What a delight to have you share your experiences with us and give us some straight talk about illusions, past lives, religion, sex, politics, and the miracles of forgiveness. And I'm happy you've joined us in Southern California. And I imagine we'll be seeing you at the Bodhi Tree sometime, won't we?
Yeah, actually, I've spoken before at the Bodhi Tree, and I do things in California. I do things for the Learning Annex sometimes. I do workshops in Los Angeles, San Diego, Santa Barbara, San Francisco, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always love to do a workshop in California because the people there are really awakening. I think they're just, you know, these, a lot of them are so much more free than people in other parts of the country.
Yes.
And, you know, of course you have beautiful people everywhere, but
yes.
there's just something about California and also Hawaii that I really like. I've been to 40 states now,
mm-hmm.
and I intend to do all 50.
Good.
And a lot of my workshops are held at Unity churches.
Yes.
And but all kinds of different places. And I must say that, you know, even though I didn't want to speak, in fact, I refused to speak in public the first 6 months that the book was out,
mm-hmm.
Even though I hated the idea, that, you know, it's really been one of the happiest experiences of my life,
mm-hmm.
because of the people that I get to meet. You know, they're just so wonderful and so
mm-hmm.
supportive and so loving, and they're the same everywhere.
And you,
when you go to a Unity church or when you go to one of my workshops, the people there are just always so great to me. And I even speak some Sunday mornings sometimes.
Well, you know what you just said? You just said that you wouldn't be able to see the greatness in those people unless you saw the greatness in yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I think that it feeds on itself and keeps going.
It does. So you just said that. So that's wonderful. Well, we're coming up on the end of the Spiritual Hollywood Hour, Gary, and boy, did this go by fast. And I just want to thank you again for being my guest this evening, and I'm sure I'll be seeing you around campus here in Southern California. And just want to tell everybody again to go to www.garyreynard.com, GaryReynard.com. Check out what he's got going on. He's got a lot of wonderful podcasts and audiobooks and interviews, and just, you know, you need to pack a lunch because you'll be able to spend a lot of time there and get to know a lot of this wonderful philosophy and this great work that's going on. Your Immortal Reality comes out when? Is it already out?
Yeah, Your Immortal Reality has been out for a while, and actually there's going to be a third book that will be coming out in September. Maybe I can come back on the show and talk about it when it
okay.
comes out.
Okay.
That's going to be called Love Has Forgotten No One.
Oh, that sounds like a great one. Wonderful. Okay, I'm going to invite everybody now to just take a deep breath, stand up really straight, and love yourselves. And just remember that the last six letters in attraction are action. So create a wonderful life for yourself. Thanks again, Gary, for being on the show. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you next week. Good night,
thank
everybody.
You.